money, besides which it was out of order anyway. It looked like someone had given it a good kicking, or tried to at any rate. I leaned against it, watching Mum speak earnestly to Jude. Then, even from where I was standing, I saw all the colour drain from Jude's face as he stared at Mum. He leapt up, profoundly shocked. Mum pulled him back down to sit next to her and carried on talking. She leaned forward towards Jude, speaking rapidly with an animation and urgency that showed she was telling Jude something serious. Very serious. I straightened up as I watched them, wondering what on earth was going on. Jude started shaking his head, slowly at first, then more and more quickly. Whatever Mum was telling him, he didn't like it. He didn't believe it. Or maybe he didn't want to believe it. I couldn't stand it any longer. I started walking back to them. By the time I reached them, Jude was looking straight ahead, his face pale, his eyes almost feverishly bright. "Mum, sit down, Callum." I sat down next to my brother. Mum put her hand on Jude's shoulder. He turned to look at her, still stunned. "Jude, darling, I... excuse me." Jude jumped up and headed for the exit without a backwards glance. "Where's he going?" I asked. "I don't know," Mum replied unhappily. "Is he coming back?" "I don't know." Why is he upset?" "Not now, Callum. Okay?" It wasn't, but I let it drop. Almost half an hour later, Jude came back. He sat down in his original place without saying a word. "Are you okay, love?" Mum asked gently. Jude gave her a look like nothing I have ever seen before, full of hurt and love and anger. Mum actually blushed and turned away. Seconds later, Jude did the same. It was obvious. Neither of them was going to tell me what was going on. The minutes crawled by as we all sat in stony silence. "Mrs. Margaret McGregor," a nurse finally called out from outside the room next to the reception desk. Mum stood up slowly, doing her best to protect her finger. "Mrs. Margaret, she's here," I called out. "She's just coming." Mum tried to stand up. I attempted to help her, but it was hard going. "Are you trying to melt into that chair, or are you going to get up and help?" I snapped at my brother. In a daze, Jude stood up. We steadied Mum between us and walked into the nurse's little cubbyhole. "My mum needs to see a doctor," I said when we barely got our feet into the room. "All patients are assessed here first before they see a doctor," the nurse informed us. "That's fine," Mum said, casting a warning look at me. The nurse shut the door behind us as Mum and Jude sat down. I stood up behind him. The nurse headed back to her chair, stating, "I'm Nurse Carter. I'll be your primary nurse whilst you're at the hospital." "Good, fine," Mum nodded. "Formalities first, I'm afraid. Before we can administer any kind of medical care, I need to see your ID cards." "Sorry?" Mum frowned. "It's the new government ruling. All patient IDs have to be checked and registered. I think it's their way of trying to stop benefit swindles." "I beg your pardon?" Mum's frown deepened. "I'm not even on benefits. It doesn't matter. This hospital and every other Nort hospital in the country gets a certain amount of money per patient we treat. The government are claiming that some hospitals have been trying to abuse the system. So the government's foolproof plan..." The sneer in Nurse Carter's voice made it only too clear what she thought of this so-called foolproof plan. "...is to check each patient's ID card, photo and fingerprint, so that patients can't hop around from hospital to hospital getting sickness certificates, and hospitals can't lie about the number of patients they treat. That's the theory, anyway." "And if I refuse to hand over my ID card?" Mum asked. "Then we can't treat you," Nurse Carter shrugged, regretfully. "I don't think I have it. I left it at home." Nurse Carter sighed. "Then I'll need the ID cards of at least two other people who can vouch for you." "I resent this. I'm not trying to defraud anyone," Mum fumed. "I know, and no one here is accusing you of anything of the kind, but unfortunately, we have no choice." Mum lifted up her hand. Although her palm was facing down and the back of her hand upwards, Mum's index finger was a V pointing up at the yellowing ceiling. "Why don't you just chop off my finger and hold it to ransom until I can prove I'm who I say I am?" "That won't be necessary," the nurse smiled. She turned her gaze on Jude and me. "These are your sons?" "Yes," Mum answered brusquely. They're fine boys.
I think so.
Mum allowed herself a faint trace of pride as she looked straight at Jude. Very fine boys. As Jude blushed, I ruffled his hair. Get off, he scowled at my grinning face. Which one's the oldest?
Mum paused for only a moment as she remembered Lynette.
Jude, here, she supplied before my brother could. And this is Callum, my youngest.
Okay, Jude, Nurse Carter smiled. May I see your ID card?
Jude dug into his jacket pocket and pulled it out. I did the same. Nurse Carter swiped them through something attached to her computer. It looked a bit like a machine for checking credit cards.
What's that for? Jude asked.
All done. The nurse handed Jude's ID card back to him. She held out her hand to give back mine.
What is that? I asked.
I hadn't failed to notice that she hadn't answered Jude's question.
It just stores your ID details and thumbprints on our hospital database.
I don't want my son's fingerprints stored. Mum leapt to her feet, her face pale. Wipe it off, now!
Don't worry, Mrs. McGregor. As soon as you're able to bring your ID card, your son's details will be deleted.
You're sure? Mum said slowly, sitting back down.
Positive. That's standard hospital procedure.
Nurse Carter looked from Mum to Jude and I and back again. She was trying and failing to keep the curiosity out of her expression. Jude looked down at his hands, and then I realised what was going on. So much for my so-called intelligence. I hadn't realised until now why Mum had panicked at the thought of Jude's prints being on file somewhere. Today was obviously my day for being incredibly slow on the uptake.
Nurse Carter lifted Mum's right hand by the wrist.
How did you do this, anyway?
It was an accident, Mum mumbled. I hit something I shouldn't have.
Nurse Carter gave Mum a considering look. I see, was all she said. The nurse examined Mum's hand very carefully, turning it this way and that as gently as she could. But even at her gentlest, the nurse still made beads of sweat break out over Mum's forehead and brought a pained shimmer to her eyes.
Well, you've definitely dislocated something in there, Nurse Carter said at last.
I mean, duh, we knew that already.
And the look Mum gave the nurse said as much.
Yes, I know. But it never hurts to get a second opinion on these things. You'll need an X-ray and then we'll get a doctor to sort you out, okay?
Mum nodded.
We had to wait an hour before one of the only two X-ray rooms in the entire hospital became available, and then we had to wait another 45 minutes before a doctor came to see us. The doctor finally gave Mum two injections at the base of her finger to numb any pain she might feel whilst he reset her bone. But he wriggled the needle around so much each time that poor Mum was almost biting a chunk out of her lip by the time he'd finished. He prodded it a few times.
"Does that hurt?" the doctor asked.
"Nope. You're sure?"
"Of course I'm sure. I'm hardly going to say no otherwise, am I?"
The doctor acknowledged Mum had a point with a nod of his head. He carefully manipulated her finger, feeling along it on both sides before giving it a hard tug. Jude and I winced, and I, for one, closed my eyes.
"He should have given us some warning. I didn't realise he was going to just yank it.
Did that hurt?" he asked immediately.
Mum shook her head.
"The injections did," she said. "That didn't."
"Good," the doctor smiled.
He took a bandage out of his pocket and started binding Mum's index finger to her middle finger. "You'll need to keep this out of water and bandaged for the next 3 weeks."
"3 weeks? I can't keep my fingers bandaged up for that long. I'm a housemaid. How can I clean anything with my fingers like this?"
"You either keep them bandaged for 3 weeks or you can forget about being able to use them at all," the doctor warned.
"You must give your finger a chance to heal."
"But, doctor, I mean it, Mrs. McGregor. If you don't take my advice, you'll regret it."
Mum scowled at him, but she got the message.
"You okay now, Mum?" I asked as we left our curtained cubicle.
"I'll live."
Mum's voice was clipped with worry. She headed straight back to Nurse Carter's station. Using her left hand, she knocked on the door. 3 smart taps that signalled business. The door opened almost immediately.
"I'll be back first thing tomorrow morning with my ID, and I'm going to trust you to delete my son's ID info from your database,"
Mum said.
Which son? Nurse Carter asked.
Both of them, Mum declared.
Don't worry, Nurse Carter smiled gently. It's as good as done already. You have nothing to worry about.
Mum visibly relaxed.
Good. Good. Thanks for all your help.
My pleasure. Nurse Carter shut the door as Mum turned to leave. Moments later we were out of A&E, thank goodness, and on our way home. It was a good 40-minute walk back home, but the early April night wasn't too chilly. I looked up and made a wish on the first star I saw, something Seffy had taught me. The same wish made on every star I saw.
Is your finger still okay?
Jude asked Mum.
Yes, the injections haven't worn off yet, Mum smiled.
They walked side by side back home, with me trailing behind them. Our IDs were on the hospital database. Why did that worry me so much?
But don't be silly, I told myself. You're agonizing over nothing. How did the saying go? If you go looking for trouble, you will surely find it.
Chapter 53. I limit myself to a glass a night, just enough to warm me up and chill me out. Waking up the following morning after my first night's drinking had taught me not to overdo it. Each minute sound, each tiny movement had set off a series of massive explosions in my head like nothing I'd ever experienced before, and I never wanted to go through that again either. All things in moderation. I'm not a drunk, not like Mother. I just drink because... well, because... I don't like the taste of this stuff particularly, and God knows it still gives me the worst morning headaches I've ever had in my life. But it makes me feel okay when I'm drinking it, kind of warm and careless. It smooths out the rough edges, as Mother says. I don't mind so much about Mother anymore. I don't even mind so much about Callum. A couple of drinks, and I don't mind about anything. Isn't that cool?
Chapter 54.
Mum went back and had our information deleted off the hospital database, but she's still not happy. The slightest noise outside, the lightest knock at the door, and we have to scrape her off the ceiling.
Why don't you just walk around with a I am guilty sign wrapped around you, Dad snapped.
I winced the moment he said it, as did Mum.
I'm sorry, Meggie, Dad sighed.
Mum turned and walked away from him without saying a word. Dad slammed out of the house. Jude turned up the telly volume, even though it was fine as it was before. I bent my head and carried on with my homework.
But we couldn't go on like that.
We were all sitting down for Sunday lunch of mince and spaghetti when Mum suddenly threw down her fork.
Ryan, I want you out of this house, Mum declared.
The floor beneath my chair disappeared and I started free-falling.
What?
Dad frowned.
I want you out of this house by morning. I've thought about it, and this is the only way, said Mum. It's too late for you and me, but it's not too late for Jude. I'm not going to let you drag a noose around his neck. I love him too much to let you do that.
I love him too, Dad stared at her.
I don't like the way you show it, Mum told him. So, you must leave.
I'm damned if I'll leave my own house, Dad declared.
You will if you love any of us as much as you say you do, Mum said.
I looked from Dad to Mum and back again, horrified.
I wasn't the only one at the table who knew that Mum meant every word.
You've never understood why I'm doing this, Dad said bitterly.
I want something more for my sons, something better.
And the end justifies the means.
Yes, in this case it does. Especially when the daggers haven't left us with any other option. I'm not arguing with you, Ryan. Just pack your bags and leave. Okay?
No, it's not okay, Dad shouted, making us all jump.
If Dad leaves, then so do I, Jude piped up.
No, you won't,
Mum and Dad spoke in unison. Jude looked at Dad, bewildered. But you can't stop me from belonging to the Liberation Militia. I'm not going to bow out now. Jude, Mum said, intensely hurt. Mum, for the first time in my life, I'm doing something I totally believe in. I can actually do some good, make a difference. Make a difference. I'm sorry if that upsets you, but sending Dad away won't change my mind. I'll just go with him, that's all. And if I don't take you, Dad asked, then I'll find somewhere else to stay. But I'm not giving up the LM, I'm not. Then you can both leave, Mum said stonily. And I'll do whatever I have to do to protect Callum. And if I can only save one of my children, then so be it. They all started shouting and screaming at each other at that. I stood up and headed for the door. I had to get out of there fast. They were all too busy hating each other to notice me. I slipped out of the front door and ran.
Chapter 55. Hi, Callum, old friend, old buddy, old pal. How are you on this glorious day? Isn't it a beautiful Sunday? The birds are singing, not over here, but somewhere they must be singing, don't you think? Don't you think, old buddy, old pal? I burst out laughing. Callum had a very strange look on his face as he watched me. He wasn't laughing, though. Why wasn't he laughing? I tried to stop, but the look on his face made me laugh even harder. He leaned forward and sniffed at my breath. The look on his face made me laugh until my eyes began to water. And the next thing I knew, Callum had me by the shoulders and was shaking me like a country dog shakes a rabbit. Stop it! What the hell do you think you're doing? Callum shouted at me. The look on his face scared me, actually scared me. I'd never seen him so furiously angry before. Let go! Callum let go of me almost before the words were out of my mouth. I stumbled backwards and fell in a heap. I tried to scramble to my feet, but the beach was swaying. If the beach would just stop swaying for 2 seconds. Look at you, Seffy, Callum said, his voice ringing with disgust. You're drunk as a skunk. I am not. I've just had one glass of cider today, that's all. Or maybe two, I giggled, adding conspiratorially. It would have been wine, but I don't want Mother to get suspicious. How could you be so stupid? Callum roared. I wish he'd stop. He was making my head hurt. You want to end up like your mother? Don't be ridiculous. I finally managed to get to my feet, but the whole world was rocking beneath them. I'm not. I can't stand your mother, but at least she had a reason to start. What's your excuse? Not enough attention? Daddy's allowance not big enough? Mummy not giving you enough love? Bed not wide enough? Bedroom carpet not plush enough? Stop it! I was sobering up fast. Callum was being horrible. Don't stand there and judge me. How dare you? If you behave like a complete moron, don't bleat when that's how others treat you. I'm not a moron. No, you're worse. You're a drunk, a lush, an alky. I covered my ears. Don't say that. That's enough. Is it? Come on, then. I'm waiting to hear your reasons. I'm all ears. You wouldn't understand. Try me. I'm tired, okay? I shouted at him, shouted for the whole world to hear. Tired of what? Of my mother and father, my sister? Of you too, if you must know. I'm tired of the way you all make me feel. This is it for me, isn't it? Be a good girl, study at school, study at university, get a good job, marry a good man, live a good life, and they all lived happily ever after. The whole thing just makes me want to puke. I want something more in my life. And you reckon you'll find it in a wine bottle? I kicked at the sand beneath my feet. I don't know where else to look, I finally admitted. Seffy, don't follow your mother, okay? She's headed for a mental home or a coffin. Is that really what you want? That made me start, and no mistake. Was that really where Mother was going? I didn't want her to die like that. I didn't want to die like that. I regarded Callum, seeing myself as he must see me. A silly, pathetic child who thought that drinking was a way to grow older faster, a way to stop feeling, 'cause then nothing could hurt me. I should be getting back, I said at last, massaging my throbbing temples. Seffi, promise me you won't drink any more. No, I said at once. Callum looked so hurt and unhappy that I couldn't leave it there. I just couldn't. But I promise I'll try, I added. On the spur of the moment, I leaned forward and kissed Callum on the lips. He moved back. Don't want to see what kissing is like anymore, huh? I tried to tease. You stink of alcohol, Callum told me. My smile vanished. Do you know something, Callum? Sometimes you can be just as cruel as my dad is to my mother. Sorry. I turned to walk away. Seffi, I'm sorry. Callum pulled me back. Just get lost. Not without you. Callum gave a pathetic attempt at a smile. Leave me alone! I screamed at him, knocking his arm away. I should have known you wouldn't understand. I should have realized. Besides, you have other fish to fry now. You're part of the Liberation Militia. You must be so proud of yourselves. I'm not a member of the LM. I never have been. Callum denied harshly. How did you know about the bomb at the Dundale then? Callum pressed his lips firmly together. I recognized that look. He wasn't going to say a word. You should have let me get blown up, Callum. Sometimes I wish you had... Callum kissed me then. And it wasn't like the first time we'd kissed either. He wrapped his arms around me and closed his eyes and kissed me. And after a startled moment, I did exactly the same. And it wasn't bad either. But it wasn't enough. Our kiss deepened, and his hands began to wander, and so did mine. And it made things better. But it wasn't enough.
Chapter 56. Of course, I admit it. Things went too far. We didn't go all the way, not all the way. But I'd only meant to kiss her to show that I didn't care if she reeked a ruddy cider. I wouldn't even care if her face was covered with puke. Well, maybe that's going a bit far. But I wanted to show her. Anyway, I'm going to have to be more careful. But Seffi's just a kid, really. We both stopped in time. Not just one of us. I think we both realised we were moving too far, too fast. But now, the thing is, I'm doing my head in thinking about her. Jude would bust a gut if he could read my mind. He'd probably literally do it too. I'm only 16 and Seffi's not even 15 yet. In my world, the trouble never stops. In hers, it never starts. This drinking nonsense is just her way of getting attention. I mean, it's not even as if she's getting drunk on proper booze, not whiskey or gin or vodka, but cider, for goodness sake. She's bored, that's all it is. I wish she could live half my life, just half. That'd soon give her something to occupy her time. Come on, Callum, think of something else or you'll never get any sleep. I wonder what she's doing at this precise moment. Lying in bed, thinking of me? I hope so. Dear God, if you really are out there, somewhere, please find some way for Seffi and I to be together when we're older. For good and all when we're older. Together forever. Dear God, please. If it's not too much to ask, if you're out there, Callum, for goodness sake, stop daydreaming and get some sleep. You're being totally pathetic. Stop it. There was no warning, no knock at the door, no warning shouts, nothing. The first I knew about it was the crash when our front door was battered in. Shouts, calls, a scream, footsteps charging, doors banging, more shouts, more footsteps, pound, pound, pound up the stairs. By the time I was fully awake and had swung my legs out of bed, smoke was everywhere. At least I thought it was smoke. I dropped to the floor. Jude?
"Jude!" I yelled, terrified that my brother was still asleep. I jumped up, looking around for him. It was only then that I realised it wasn't smoke filling my room, filling the house. The strong smell of garlic caught in the back of my throat and brought instant tears to my eyes. I coughed and coughed, my lungs threatening to explode from my body, and my eyes were streaming. Tear gas! I struggled to my feet and groped my way to the front door. "Down! Get down!" A voice, no, more than one voice, screamed at me. I turned in the direction of the voice, only to be pushed to my knees, then down to the ground. My chin hit the hard floor, making me bite down on my tongue. My arms were jerked behind my body, hands bent back, cold, hard steel cutting into my wrists. My eyes hurt, my lungs hurt, my tongue hurt. I was pulled to my knees, then yanked up, pushed and pulled and punched forward. I couldn't see. I closed my burning eyes, and I admit I was crying by now, trying to clear the tear gas, desperate to stop the pain. My lungs were being filled with sandpaper. Stop breathing. Just stop. But I couldn't, and each breath was strong as ammonia, sharp as a razor. "Jude! Mum! Dad!" I called out, only to choke over the words. Only to choke. I couldn't take much more. My body began to seize up, curl in on itself. And suddenly we were out. Out of the house. Out into the cool night air. I tried to draw a breath. My lungs were being sliced. I gasped. More air. Clean, fresh air. Just as I was pushed into the back of a car, I heard my mum crying. "Mum!" I called. I blinked and blinked again, looking around, trying to see her. Shapes and shadows swam before me. The car took off. My hands were still handcuffed behind my back. My whole body hurt, and I still didn't know why.
Chapter 57. I can't keep doing this, bouncing between Mother and Minnie and school and Callum like a pinball. Everyone's controlling my life except me, and I can feel it's going to get worse, not better. I need to do something. I need to get out of here. But Callum, I don't want to lose him. I don't want to leave him, but I must. Callum's a survivor. I'm not. He'll understand if I explain it to him. I can't think when I'm around him. He confuses me. Around him, all I do is think about him. Sad but true. Pathetic but true. He kissed me tonight and held me and ran his hands over my back and my bum and my waist and pressed me against him. And it felt so strange, like I belonged right there with him, except I didn't. I wish I knew why he did it, if only I could read his mind. Wouldn't it be wonderful if Callum and I... Stop! Don't be ridiculous. You're 14, for goodness sake. Seffy, you need to get a life, literally. By the time you're ready to settle down, Callum will probably be married with 6 kids. Sort yourself out first, your life out second, and your love life out last. As if Callum would be interested in a kid like you anyway. But he did kiss me. Listen to me, talking to myself, telling myself off. I'm really losing it. But I need to take my own advice. Get away. Get a life. Start now, before it's too late. Mother, I want to go away to school. Mother opened her eyes and blinked at me like a stunned owl. What, sweetie? I want to go away to school. I need to get away from here, from everything. Where would you go? Mother struggled to sit up on her bed. Her eyes were vampire red. There was a telltale smell in the room. I looked at Mother, and it was like looking in a mirror that foretold the future. But only for an instant. The smell was vile, the sight was worse, and the mirror cracked. I want to go away to school, a boarding school somewhere. Callum, I was thinking maybe Chivers boarding school, 'cause it's not too far away. Just far enough away to keep me away from here. Too far for weekend visits in either direction. Far enough away to find something I liked about myself. Far enough away to grow up. Only about 150 kilometres, I continued. Callum, What would I do without you? I could see from Mother's eyes that our conversation was finally beginning to sink in. You'll have Minnie and the servants and all your friends and parties and everything. I forced a smile. I want to go. Please, Mother. You really want to leave? Yes. Mother looked at me, a moment of perfect understanding between us. And it made me so sad. I almost changed my mind then. Almost, but not quite. I can see you've made your mind up about this. I have. And when would you want to start? Now, or in September at the latest? But September's only a few months away. I know. Mother looked at me, then lowered her gaze. I don't think so, sweetie, she said somberly. Mother, I want to go. I don't think it's a good idea, Mother said, shaking her head. For who? You or me? I said no, Seffy. I turned and slammed out of her room, grimly satisfied at the muffled wail Mother let out at the noise. I leaned against the wall, trying to figure out what my next move should be. In a moment of pure clarity, I realized there was only one thing holding me back. One person stopping me from packing my bags and walking to Chivers right now. I had no idea how I was going to explain my plans to him, but I had to. Callum would understand. He'd be on my side once he understood my reasons. Callum and I were like two sides of the same coin. If Mother thought I was going to let the matter stop and drop here, she had another thought coming. I needed to get away. Get out. Before it was too late.
Chapter 58. Tell me about your brother's involvement with the Liberation Militia.
My brother's not in the Liberation Militia, I denied, the words coming out as little more than a slur. I was so tired. How long had we been doing this? 1 hour? 20? Two plain-clothed officers sat at the table opposite me. Only one of them was doing the talking, though. This was obviously their version of bad cop, silent cop. I'll ask you again. Which LM cell do you belong to?
I don't. I don't. I don't.
When did Jude join the Liberation Militia?
He didn't, as far as I know.
When did your mother join the LM?
She didn't. She hasn't.
You sound very sure.
I am.
You weren't that sure about your brother.
I am.
What LM cell does your father belong to?
None of them.
Come on now. We know all about your family's involvement with the LM. What do you need me for then?
The two officers exchanged a look. I was cheesing them off.
Good. Corroboration, said the silent one at last. Confirm what we know already, and we'll go easy on you.
I don't know anything. I tried to rest my head on my arms on the table, but the one who'd done most of the talking pushed my head back up. I sat back in my chair, utterly weary, and something else besides. But I wasn't going to show them that.
Don't mess us about, son.
I'm not your son,
and I'm not someone you want to make an enemy of, said the non-talkative officer. Whose idea was the Dundell bomb? Your brother's or your father's? You all hate crosses, don't you? You'd all do whatever it took to annihilate the lot of us. That's true, isn't it?
How old were you when you joined the LM?
And on and round, question after question. No rest, no peace, no respite. Until my head was spinning giddy and each question echoed with the one before it and the one before that, until I thought, so this is what it's like to go crazy. And what about Mum and Dad and Jude? Where were they? What were they doing? Why were the police so intent on my brother? I bit down hard on my bottom lip, terrified that I was actually voicing my thoughts, terrified of what I might give away. Think of something else. Think of nothing at all. Think of nothing. And that's when my mind closed down and the world stopped spinning. I opened my eyes slowly. Please, no more questions. I couldn't take any more questions.
I wasn't in the interrogation room anymore. I was back in my cell, with Mum, sitting on the bed beside me, stroking my hair back off my face. Callum? Thank goodness. Are you okay? They didn't hurt you? I took my time to sit up, shaking my head as I did so. Well, where's Dad? Where's Jude? I asked. Your dad's still being questioned, and... Mum took a deep breath. I don't know where Jude is. He wasn't in the house when those animals came crashing in. He wasn't? What's going on? What do they want? Why are they going on and on about Jude? They found an empty can of drink near to where the Dumbdell bomb went off, Mum said grimly. So? So, the can had Jude's prints all over it. So they say. It's a damned lie, of course, but they reckon they cross-referenced it with the print on his ID card. But how did they get hold of his ID card? And then I realised. Mum nodded. They scanned in his card when we were at the hospital. I guess they got the information from the computer before the nurse had a chance to delete it. If she ever really did. But Jude didn't... I looked straight at Mum. Did he? They're saying he planted the bomb. They're saying when they catch him, he'll hang. And Mum's face dissolved into a stream of tears. They won't get him. Once Jude knows they're looking for him, I said frantically. It's just a matter of time. Mum shook her head. We both know that. And they've already issued a reward for information leading to his capture. What kind of reward? 50,000. There was nothing to be said at that. Words and tears and prayers were useless. With that kind of money up for grabs, it was just a matter of time before Jude was arrested. They've probably planted the evidence themselves. They don't have a clue who planted that bomb, and they're just looking for a scapegoat. My voice was barely above a whisper. I couldn't take it all in. They wanted to hang my brother. Nothing on this earth would make me believe he'd actually planted that car bomb. He might have been there, but he wouldn't have been the one to put it together and set it to go off. Jude wouldn't do that. He wouldn't. If they only want Jude, why are they still questioning Dad? Dad demanded to see them once we knew they were after Jude, Mum told me. Why? What's Dad doing? I have no idea. Mum wiped her eyes with the back of her hand. Probably saying the same as you, no doubt. I just hope he's careful. I stared at Mum. What do you mean? Mum just shook her head. Before I could speak, the cell door clicked open. An officer I hadn't seen yet opened the door wide. He was a slim man with cutting eyes who looked at us like we were worse than nothing. You two can go now. Where's my husband? Mum asked at once. He's being held, after which he'll be formally charged, the officer told us. Charged with what? I asked. My husband has done nothing wrong. Why is he being held? Mum asked, her voice shaking, but it was hard to tell whether it shook with fear or anger. Get your things and leave, the officer said. I haven't got all day. I demand to know why you're holding my husband. I want to see him. Now! Mum exploded. One look at the officer's furious expression was enough to tell me that there'd be snowball-throwing contests in hell before this guy helped us in any way. You can leave, or you can spend the rest of the night in this cell. The officer's voice dripped ice. It's your choice. May I see my husband, please? Mum forced herself to be civil, but it was too late. I'm afraid not. No one but his lawyer will be allowed to see him until after he's formally charged, the officer told us. What is he to be charged with? I asked again, desperate for an answer. Political terrorism and 7 counts of murder.
Chapter 59. Come on, Callum, pick up the phone. Nothing doing. It just continued to ring. I glanced down at my watch. Where was everyone? Someone should have picked up the phone by now. It was almost 9 o'clock in the morning, for goodness sake. I put the phone down, trying to swallow down the uneasy feeling in my stomach. Wait till later, then tell him your news in person. Tell him that come September, you'll be gone. Will he try to persuade you to stay? Will he even care? Wait till later and find out.
Chapter 60. The offices of Stanhope and Rigby were every shade of dingy grey and dirty white imaginable. The waiting room chairs were more like benches, made from the hardest, and I do mean hardest, oak. The coffee machine had scum marks all over it, and the windows were so dirty it was impossible to make out anything beyond them. This was the 5th solicitor's office offering free legal aid that Mum and I had tried. Once the other solicitors had learned about Dad's case, we'd been shown the door so fast I was beginning to suffer from jet lag. But this office was by far the seediest. I told myself that beggars couldn't be choosers, but it didn't help. Mum, let's go, I said, standing up. We can find better solicitors than this. What do you mean? Mum frowned. Well, look at this place. I bet even cockroaches avoid this dump. Don't judge by appearances, a voice from behind me made me jump. Mum stood up as I turned around. A middle-aged man with jet black hair, silvering at the temples, stood in the doorway. He wore a checked shirt and denims, and an expression on his face that was harder than titanium nails. And you are? I asked. Adam Stanhope, the man replied. This is your company, Mr. Stanhope, Mum asked. My father started it. I've carried it on, he said. I was impressed with that for a start. Only one of the other solicitors we tried had been a nought. The rest had been crosses. I knew there were no nought barristers, but I hadn't expected to come across a nought solicitor whose father had been a solicitor before him. Where's Mr. or Miss Rigby, then? I asked, still not sure whether or not I liked this guy. Dead. This way, please. Mr. Stanhope turned and led the way out of the waiting room. Mum gave me one of her warning looks as we followed him. We walked behind him, our footsteps not so much clicking as crunching on the cracked lino. Goodness only knew what it was covered with. A thin coating of honey-flavoured cereal from the sticky feel of it. We stopped outside a door which looked like a reinforced toilet cubicle door. Mr. Stanhope flung open the door and... Wow! Polished wooden floor, creamy white walls, mahogany furniture, leather sofa. Everything in the room spelt class with a capital C. I stared at Mr. Stanhope, amazed. I thought you'd like my office, Mr. Stanhope said dryly. Tell me, do you think this room makes me a better solicitor or a worse one? I got the point. Why is your waiting room so grotty, then? Let's just say that crosses are, shall we say, reassured by its appearance, said Mr. Stanhope. It doesn't pay to appear too successful. Please take a seat, both of you. I waited until Mum sat down first before doing the same. How can I help you, Mrs. McGregor, Mum supplied. It's about my husband, Ryan. He's being held by the police. Has he been formally arrested? Yes. Mum lowered her head before forcing herself to look Mr. Stanhope straight in the eye. He's been charged with murder and political terrorism. The Dundell bombing. Mr. Stanhope sat back in his chair. That's right, Mum replied. But he didn't do it. I know he didn't do it. He told you that, did he? The police won't let me talk to him. I need a lawyer, someone who can get in to see him on my behalf. I see. I don't have much money. I see. I saw in the telephone directory that you do legal aid work.
If Mr. Stanhope leaned any further back, his whole body would sink right through the chair. Did he think bad luck was contagious, then?
"Can you help us?" Mum asked, a tinge of impatience in her voice.
Mr. Stanhope stood up and went to look out of his crystal-clear window. Venetian blinds were positioned to let in optimum light while still keeping the room private. I wondered what he could see. I wished I knew what he was thinking.
"Legal aid wouldn't begin to cover the costs in a case like this," Mr. Stanhope began. "I can't work for free, Mrs. McGregor."
"I'm not asking you to," Mum replied rapidly. "I'll pay you whatever it takes. I just want my husband's name cleared."
Mr. Stanhope gave Mum a long, hard look before answering.
"I'll go and see your husband first, then I'll make a decision."
Mum nodded and stood up.
"But from this moment on, you talk to no one but me. Understood?"
Mum nodded again. I stood up and asked, "Mr. Stanhope, are you any good?"
"Pardon?"
"As a lawyer, are you any good?"
"Callum," Mum admonished.
"No, Mrs. McGregor, it's a fair question." Mr. Stanhope turned to me.
"I've won far more cases than I've lost. Okay?"
"Okay," I nodded. We left the office. Mum and I sat in the police station waiting room for ages and ages. No one offered us a coffee. A couple of times we got a, "Can I help you?" from officers entering the station, but that was all. Mr. Stanhope had disappeared to talk to Dad and review the police case. They didn't have a case, so what was taking so long? I wanted to see Dad. I wondered where Jude was. I wanted to go home and wake up and find that the last year hadn't happened. I wanted too much. Mum stared ahead, twisting her thumbs around each other whilst we waited. I was beginning to wonder if Mr. Stanhope had just given up and gone home and we'd been forgotten when he finally made an appearance. And from the look on his face, I could tell right away that it wasn't good news.
"What's the matter? Is he all right?"
Mum leapt to her feet.
"What have they done to him?"
"Could both of you come with me, please?" Mr. Stanhope said grimly. After exchanging a worried look, Mum and I followed the lawyer without a word. A police officer held open one of the heavy double doors which led to the cells.
"Thank you," Mr. Stanhope acknowledged the gesture, as did my mum. I didn't. The officer walked behind us. When we got to the last cell on the left, we all stood to one side as the officer opened the door. The moment the door was open, Mum flew into the room. I hadn't blinked before Dad and Mum were hugging each other as if they were glued together.
"Ryan, what's going on?" Mum whispered. "Are you okay? You're not hurt?"
Dad turned to beckon to me. Slowly, I walked over to him, knowing that he was going to hug me too. I wasn't wrong either. I wanted to be hugged by him. I didn't want to let him go because I was so scared. He hadn't done anything. Why was he still being held?
"Mr. McGregor, would you like to tell your family what you told me?" Mr. Stanhope asked.
"Never mind that," Dad dismissed. "Where's Jude? Have they let him go? Is he safe?"
"Jude? The police never had him. He wasn't in the house," Mum frowned. "I have no idea where he is."
Dad stared. Then he looked so furiously angry that I found myself taking a step backwards.
"Those bastards! They said they had him! They said Jude was as good as hanged!"
Dad swallowed hard and turned away from Mum and me. Now he looked like the whole world had descended onto his shoulders.
"Ryan, what did you do?" Mum whispered.
Silence.
"Ryan."
"I signed a confession, admitting to all the charges." Dad's voice trailed off.
"What?" Mum breathed. "Are you crazy?"
"They said they had Jude, and proof he was the bomber. They said someone had to take the blame for the Dundell bomb, and it was up to me who took the fall."
"And you believed them?"
Mum asked furiously.
"Meggy,
they threatened that you and Callum would also go to prison for conspiracy. It was my life or the lives of my entire family."
"Did you do it?" Did you plant the bomb that killed all those people?
Dad looked straight at Mum. He didn't even blink.
No.
Then why?
I had no choice, Dad repeated. Anger held his body tense and rigid. He looked like he was about to snap in half. Mum blinked, totally bemused. If you put your hand up to the Dundell murders, you'll hang.
I know, said Dad quietly.
I looked at Mr. Stanhope, as if his face could tell me what I couldn't understand on Dad's.
You want to die? Mum asked, bewildered. Don't be stupid.
Mrs. McGregor, the moment Detective Inspector Santiago told your husband the identification of the person whose prints were found, your husband confessed to everything. And his dictating and signing of the confession were videotaped. The tape will clearly show his confession was made without duress, said Mr. Stanhope softly.
Dad lowered his head and lowered his voice to match until it was barely above a hush whisper.
Maggie, they've found two of Jude's fingerprints on a cola can fragment in the bin where the bomb went off.
That doesn't prove anything, Mum interrupted, her voice harsh. That just means
a print was also found on part of the bomb casing that survived the explosion, Dad cut across her, and the prints match.
The world flipped crazily, and I started to fall faster and further away from sanity.
Jude was the bomber.
That couldn't be right. The crosses had set him up, framed him. My brother wasn't a bomber. He wouldn't do anything like that, and he certainly wouldn't be stupid enough to leave his fingerprints all over the bomb casing, unless he thought there wouldn't be anything left of the bomb to identify one way or another, so why bother to wear gloves?
Jude was the bomber.
I told the police the truth. Dad raised his voice to its normal level. I brought the cola from home. I didn't want to risk anyone seeing me if I went into the shops to buy one. That's the only reason it's got Jude's fingerprints on it. He must have handled it and put it back, and I didn't realise. And as for the casing, I kept the necessary equipment around the house. Jude must have handled that as well. He obviously didn't realise what he was touching. He was just curious.
Dad raised his head and spun around, shouting into each corner of the room in turn.
Jude had nothing to do with this. Do you hear? I'm guilty. No one else.
They didn't believe that, did they?
No one in his or her right mind would believe that ridiculous cock and bull story.
Ryan.
Tears flowed down Mum's face. No, Maggie. I'm guilty. That's the truth, and I'm sticking to it. I won't let them put you and Callum in prison for this. Or Jude, Dad interrupted. He lowered his voice again.
Just make sure that Jude stays lost so the daggers can't get their hands on him. If they find him, he'll rot in prison.
A tiny, sad smile played over Dad's face, but it was gone in an instant.
But at least my confession means he won't die.
Chapter 61. Today, Ryan Callum McGregor of 15 Hugo Yard, Meadowview, was formally charged with political terrorism and 7 counts of murder for the bombing outrage at the Dundell Shopping Centre. He has confessed to all charges, so the court case against him will be a mere formality. His family, consisting of his wife Margaret and 2 sons, Jude and Callum, are said to be in hiding.
Every word was an arrow pinning me to my chair. But he didn't do it. I knew that as surely as I knew my own name. Callum's dad was no more the bomber than I was. Of course he didn't do it. I had to help. I had to prove that. But how? There had to be some way, something I could do. What could I do to help him? Think, think. Blanker scumbag.
Minnie hissed from across the room. His whole family should swing, not just him. Minerva, I won't have language like that in this house. Do you hear? You don't live in Meadowview.
Yes, Mother, Minnie said, chastened. But it didn't last long.
And to think we've had him here in this very house, and his wife actually used to work here. If the press get hold of that little bit of info, they're going to have a field day, and Dad's going to have kittens.
What do you mean? I asked.
Oh, Seffy, use your brain. If Ryan McGregor gets off, Dad will be accused of favouritism and protecting his own and all sorts, whether or not it has anything to do with him.
But the Dundell bomb had nothing to do with Mr. McGregor.
Nonsense! He's confessed, hasn't he?
I turned to Mother. She looked very thoughtful. Mother, they won't really hang him, will they?
If he's guilty.
Mother shrugged.
And Callum goes to our school, Minnie continued. Dad's going to get it in the neck for that as well.
Callum has absolutely nothing to do with this.
An apple never falls far from the tree, Minnie nodded.
What a pile of Persephone!
Mother's harsh warning had me biting back the rest of what I wanted to say.
Even if Ryan McGregor is guilty, which I don't believe for one second, that doesn't mean that Callum... Oh, Persephone, grow up!
The rebuke didn't come from my sister. Mother shook her head at me before she stood up and left the room.
You haven't a clue about the real world, have you? Minnie said, her voice dripping with contempt.
Congratulations. You sound just like Mother, I took malicious delight in telling her. Minnie said something incredibly unladylike and flounced out of the room. I smirked at her disappearing back until the door was shut. Then my smile faded. I stared at the closed door, feeling totally alone.
What was it about me that made everyone do that? Walk out, leave, abandon me, after dismissing me? Why did what I said and did invariably drive everyone away? Mother, Minnie, even Callum. But I was right about this one. Callum's dad wasn't the Dundell bomber. Mother and Minnie were wrong, and I was going to prove it. I just had to figure out how.
Chapter 62. After only about 5 minutes of waiting, Mum and I were shown into Mr. Stanhope's plush office. His secretary had told Mum that it was urgent and about the case, but that was all she said. Mum and I both had the same question. What case? The last time we'd seen Mr. Stanhope, which was 3 days ago now, he told us quite categorically that he wasn't going to take the case. Mrs. McGregor, Callum, please take a seat. Mr. Stanhope was all smiles from the moment we set foot inside his hallowed walls. One look at his face and my heart began to thump with painfully suppressed hope. "You have some news?" Mum asked eagerly. "Are they going to let Ryan go?" "I am afraid not." Mr. Stanhope's smile faded slightly, his voice full of regret. "Your husband still insists that he's guilty." And just like that... the hope inside was all but snuffed out, again. Why had he asked us here, then? "I've been trying to get in touch with you at your home address, but there's been no reply," Mr. Stanhope told us. "We're not at our house any more," Mum glanced at me. "We're staying with my sister Charlotte on the other side of Meadowview." "You've been getting hate letters?" Mr. Stanhope asked sharply. "Amongst other things," I scoffed, "like bricks through the window and death threats." "Well, I'm happy to tell you that I will now be able to take on your husband's case," Mr. Stanhope told Mum. "And the really good news is, I've persuaded Kalani Adams, QC, to take the case. Not that she took much persuading." "Kalani Adams?" Mum was astounded, and she wasn't the only one. Kalani Adams was not just a nationally renowned, but a world-renowned barrister. A cross barrister. Why would any cross take on Dad's case? "I can't afford a lawyer like Kalani Adams." She shook her head. "Don't worry about that. That's all taken care of." "What does that mean?" I asked before Mum could. "It means it's all taken care of." Mr. Stanhope frowned at me. Mum and I exchanged a look. "I'd appreciate it if you answered my son's question properly," Mum said.
An anonymous benefactor has stepped forward.